Welcome to the podcast, Your Future in Sales and Marketing, the podcast that helps you make great career decisions. My name is Mike Dixon, and I'm a professional sales and marketing recruiter. I love what I do, but my biggest frustration is seeing too many people not realizing their career potential. In this podcast, I'll introduce you to my network, an amazing group of business leaders from the biggest tier one organizations through to some super fast growth SMEs. They'll share their career journeys and give unique advice and insights on managing your career and leading a function and a business. Join me, Mike Dixon of AXR Recruitment and Search, to help guide your future in sales and marketing. Well, hello and welcome to the podcast, Your Future in Sales and Marketing, with me, Mike Dixon, Director of AXR Recruitment and Search. Now, our purpose at AXR is to help you make great career decisions. And in the podcast today, we're going to look at the pathway to general management in the world's biggest FMCG. So welcome to today's guest, Susan Catania, another of our superstar female leaders. Susan, of General Manager of Nestlé Foods, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Lovely to have you on the pod. Can't wait to get into your career journey and unpick as well the role of running one of the biggest FMCGs or one of the biggest business units in one of the biggest FMCGs. But before we do, I'm asking everybody the same question to kick things off. And the first one is on brand. What's your favorite brand? And you can't pick one that you've worked on.
Well, I thought about this, and if I think of my favorite brand, a brand that's been tried and tested for probably most of my life, it would be ASICS. And a passion of mine is sport, and I've played sport at a fairly high level. And the ASICS have certainly been a partner of choice through that time. And even now, you know, they enable me to get out and exercise and fuel my passion. So ASICS is definitely a strong brand, but a brand that I love and regard and respect would be Lego, and how they've modernized and reinvented themselves to be relevant today, not just for kids, but for adults. And I think that they have a wholesomeness about play that I think has lost a little bit of its way because of so much technology. And having a seven-year-old, I can see the role that brand plays in my house, and I love it.
I think Lego cleverly often, I see it kind of integrated in some of the digital offerings in terms of games and so forth, but it's all bringing you back to the main brand,
yep.
Which is actual play.
Just play and connection, you know, yeah. Like the times that, you know, my son will say, Mum, just come build a tower with me, or, you know, create something yeah. new with me. And I think that creativity and the play aspect and the tangible aspect of Lego is quite remarkable.
Fantastic. ASICS, I was an ASICS user for years, and about 5 or 6 years ago, I changed my shoes to Hoka. So I feel you probably don't like me anymore, Susan. It's a different brand.
No, it's good. It's good to try new things, but it'll be interesting to see if you go back to the old favourite or you stay.
Yeah, well, time will tell. Time will tell. But good. And just a little bit on you before we jump into your career. So life before work, you know, where did you grow up? What's your background?
It's fairly humble and non-exciting, unfortunately. I was born down the south coast of New South Wales in this tiny little beach town called Culburra Beach, and then we moved to Sydney before I started school. And then growing up, I think there were probably two predominant aspects of, I guess, what would define me as a kid. One was sport and outdoors, so very sporty, very active, very competitive in a few different sports actually, primarily though netball and athletics. And then I love people and I love connecting, and we did a lot of bike riding as a family as well. And I spent a lot of time with adults, not so much kids, on weekends doing activities. And so I was always really comfortable with people and connecting and communicating. So
yeah,
that probably the two key things from
Fantastic.
Early life.
I've been on holiday to Culburra.
Oh, it's a good spot.
What a beach.
It's not as cheap as it used to be.
No, it definitely wasn't the rent we paid. What sport have you played to the highest level? Because you said you played at a reasonable level.
Well, I went overseas with the Australian athletics team when yeah. I was 16, 17 for javelin. And then I was also in netball and I played state league netball and it was just before the Swifts were starting. And so I was in like the squad that was, you know, for the first Swifts year. And I had to pick between athletics and netball. I chose netball because it's a team sport. But I just was never tall enough, Mike, unfortunately. That was my biggest challenge. But I still play today. Yeah. I still play today. I'm 42 and I'm still on the court with some friends I used to play with when I was in my teenage years. Brilliant. So it's brilliant.
Excellent. Great. So looking at your career, Susan, over 60-odd episodes and 3 years in, and we've only had a couple of people who have, you know, spent most of their career in one business. But actually, before we started, you mentioned you actually kicked off in media before you jumped into Nestle. So just touch on the media piece and how you got into Nestle.
Yeah, I worked actually at Channel 10 before I jumped into Nestle, and I got a job there working in communication and events, and it was a busy and really dynamic place to work, also very male-dominated, and it was a really interesting place to work, but I didn't feel like I had the longevity I was looking for of career, and I was really looking for, you know, what was a company or an industry of longevity. And that was what made me look for other opportunities.
How did you find Nestle?
Do you know, at the time I was looking at lots of different jobs. In particular, I really thought and hoped to get into sports companies, so like Speedo, Nike, you know. And at that time, you know, I was only 22, 23, and so I was still really in the prime. I was training 4 days a week for netball. I was playing twice a week. So I thought that would be a great fit for capabilities but also passion. Unfortunately, none of them would even call you back. Off the back of resumes or applications, whereas Nestle I loved because it was a big company. I knew there could be longevity of career and I loved their brands and the purpose. So fortunately I got into Nestle by, you know, just being eyes open and looking in the market.
Great. And was it into like a grad program or just a first job? How did you
No,
land
first
there?
Job. Yeah. I actually applied for a territory manager role and it was in the field. And it was in sales and I'd had some experience in sales before. And I applied for this job, which was, you know, it's in a very male-dominated team. Obviously, it was customer-facing sales. And, you know, 20 years ago, it was mostly males. I was young. I was 23. And I hadn't been to uni. So, you know, I came from a very humble, probably almost borderline poor family. And so that wasn't really an option for us. And so a lot of companies wouldn't even call you back. Whereas Nestle did. So I thought that was a really brave step by them. And you know, I've certainly repaid them over 19 years.
Yeah. It's been a good partnership.
Yes.
No doubt. And when you were in that early stage sales role, as you say, a female and a reasonably male-dominated world, did you have long-term career goals or was it just enjoying the moment and what Nestle was giving you at the time?
Oh, look, early on it was just get stuck in and just prove yourself and you know, earn the respect and the credentials. And I remember my manager at the time, after about 11 months, sort of said, do you want to be a brand manager or an account manager? And I think my response was something like, I don't even know what they do. So I couldn't really answer that question. And I said, just give me more time. But as I started to understand the industry and the business, I kind of then started to shape what I thought maybe a career or a aspiration might look like for my path.
Mm. And it's interesting when you look at your career, you've gone from sales to marketing to sales to marketing in reasonably regularly through your career, which isn't super common. And it's something we talk a lot about in the pod and have done for the last few years is, you know, don't just stick in one function. Make sure you create breadth through your career. But, you know, was that quite common in Nestle at the time to have that kind of two functions going on or a multiple functional career?
Look, they definitely encourage it. And yes, I am definitely what I would classify as a sales specialist, but have at multiple times throughout my career jumped back into marketing roles and definitely to build that cross-functional experience and to build breadth of career and certainly also even empathy and understanding. I think being walking in the shoes of someone else helps you build a much broader context. So Nestle definitely encourage it. And I think if you've got the hunger, the desire, the capability, they would recommend it. But it's also not for everybody because it does take you out of, you know, your comfort zone. And I remember writing like just a one-page document after working in marketing and sort of talked a little bit about the differences between sales and marketing. And, you know, the pace is different, the breadth of, topics is different, the ability to impact and make decisions is different. Like, there's so many variances that you have to be comfortable with and accept when you change roles, functions. And I think that's common of all roles, but certainly when you're crossing functions. So it's definitely not going to be for everybody, but certainly we encourage it at Nestlé for sure.
Yeah, I love it. I think being a little bit uncomfortable is a good thing. I think it's you don't want to be out of control, but you need to be closer to that edge if you're going to develop. Otherwise, if you stay in that comfort zone, then your pathway will probably narrow quite early in terms of career.
Correct. Yeah. Yep, completely agree.
Now, did you think as you were starting to kind of carve out your career that, oh gosh, you know, I look at those senior leaders running functions, running business units, that's something I could do? Was that a goal you set early on in your career?
I wouldn't say I set that goal early in my career. I think early on I was just about getting in and building skills and capabilities and thinking about breadth and, you know, making sure I wasn't a skinny tower in 20 years. But I probably about 5 or 6 years in, someone sort of tapped me on the shoulder and they gave me the impression that they really thought that there was something extra there that they thought could go further. And so they really encouraged me. And it probably goes back to sport maybe. Like, I think I've always been a bit of a natural leader where whatever role I had, I just assumed some sort of leadership and was really comfortable with that. So I certainly didn't pick it early, but it was certainly encouraged after 4 or 5 years. And then the decision to actually go into a senior leader role, I probably was very conservative about, if I'm honest, and very considered. And it was probably because when you look at senior leader roles, the impact they can have on an organisation, first and foremost, but even more so individuals and a broad team of individuals, is quite significant. And I think we've all worked for those types of bosses that haven't been great at it, and I didn't want to be that person. So I think if you know, you make sure you've got the right skills and the right time where you can actually do the role justice and take the privilege of the role seriously, I took really seriously.
Yeah. So someone spotted your potential in many respects and encouraged you to push yourself and develop.
Definitely.
Tapped you on the shoulder. And talking of tapping on the shoulder, with the accolades and success you're having, were you getting approaches externally to say, hey, what about the world outside Nestlé?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's been great opportunities outside of Nestlé, and even, you know, I wouldn't be doing myself, I guess the right thing if I wasn't even thinking about the external market and what was happening. And because you always should, as every person that's either, employed anywhere, should always keep your eyes on the market and understand your value. But, you know, for me, I look at Nestlé, and the reason I entered Nestlé in the first place was the size and the breadth of the business. You know, we have 9 businesses under the umbrella of Nestlé. And so every business has different brand tensions, different, you know, competitive positions, different cultures, different products, consumer tensions. So there's never been a lack of opportunity. There's never been a lack of growth. And, you know, one of my real values and passions is learning and growth. And so if I'm getting that, you know, I think that old adage is the grass greener comes up. But to be honest, I'm also a Capricorn, so maybe I'm also fiercely loyal. Bit of both.
Excellent. I'm curious as well around your transition. You mentioned right at the beginning from a reasonably male-dominated world when you started. As your career started to accelerate, Susan, was there female role models in more senior roles that you could look to for inspiration?
Definitely not. Not, and certainly not in customer-facing roles.
Yeah.
So there was, in the internal sales roles, there was definitely some females, but, you know, 19 years ago, not many, you know, be less than a handful. So it was definitely a male-dominated space, which, to be honest, I never looked at it, though, as I'm a female in a male space. It's been brought to my attention, but I always felt an inner confidence of doing my role, delivering my outcomes, standing my ground. And again, I don't know if that comes back from, you know, how I grew up and you know, the sport and always having a space or commanding a space. But today there's definitely a lot more females and in customer-facing roles. And I think we'll see more of that pushing through to senior roles in the future.
Yeah, we work really hard in this pod to create gender diversity, particularly on the sales side. I have to work harder in sales to get close to 50-50. It's a lot easier in marketing.
Yep.
you know, from a sales point of view, I think it is changing. What do you think the kind of triggers are to change? Why are more females starting to see success in sales?
I think they're just more trying it, if I'm honest. I mean, if you think about universities, you know, over 60% of university students are female.
Is that right? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and they don't teach sales at university. They teach marketing, they teach business. Yeah. So what we're putting in front of, you know, university students, it isn't sales. I mean, when I did my MBA, they did for that one of the years, they trialed a sales course as part of the MBA for the first time. And you know, in that you unpack so much more of the topics that are really relevant for sales that helps you understand it to then go, actually, this could be interesting. But if, you know, I talk to uni students about, you know, sales roles or even category, they don't even know what category is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get interns in. I just had an intern in recently and he didn't even know what category was, but he loves it. So it's almost a bit of what you don't know, you can't appreciate, you can't value. And I think as we encourage more women to try sales, whether that be customer facing or the internal sales roles, we'll get more of the talent coming through. And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, great. All for it, you know, and, you know, I think sales is changing too. There's the kind of skill set and capability required to be really effective in sales, I think speaks to a much wider, more diverse population. So the more, I think, female sales leaders we can have in this podcast hopefully inspires those who are in early stage career to think, actually, I could do that. Why not? Mm-hmm. It's not just about, you know, the classic male big personality anymore.
Yes, correct.
It's actually a whole range of skills you've got to bring to the function there, which is cool. Going back to that transition to senior leadership. Now, you've made it a lot daunt, and so either, you know, is it, I wonder if it's kind of behavior or capability or what kind of determines the difference. How did it happen for you when you actually eventually made that step to the senior leadership role, which you said you put off for a little bit potentially or treated it more conservatively?
Yep. I think the base is always excellent capabilities. Like, you're not going to get past go unless you have excellent capabilities in your area. But for me, the X factor really comes in when you can see someone that works in a functional area thinking and operating in a broader way and impacting in a broader way. And then, you know, for me, ultimately it's leadership. And I think the differentiator for me was leadership and that, you know, which I'm really, you know, delighted by. But, you know, I often say to people won't remember what you did, but they'll remember how you did it and they'll remember how you made them feel. And so in business we have, you know, big decisions and big impacts and you know, big, you know, deliveries, but you can always do it, you know, in a way that's respectful, in a way that's candid, in a way that, you know, really is thinking about the impact you have on people.
Mm-hmm. And when you work in a senior leadership role in a business like Nestle, what changes for you? Is it kind of perspective, responsibility, the pressure of the role, the balance in your life, you know, all of the above?
Yeah, all of the above. I think you have to think about it's, you know, especially going from either a contributor or a specialist role to a generalist or from a leader to a senior leader, you need to be thinking much broader than what's in front of you. You need to be considering much more externally than the organisation that you work in. And you certainly, yes, have a lot more pressure, and that is on your ability to think, to create, to make decisions, but also time. Mm. And, you know, I think often the time pressure is a big one where you have to be really good at setting boundaries and making decisions on what you say no to is as important as what you say yes to.
Right. Right. And give everybody a sense of the scope of your role. So what size is the, without being commercially sensitive, what size is the business, level of complexity, people you look after, just, you know, in terms of your role, just talk a little bit about what you're responsible for.
Mm-hmm. So I look after the foods business in Australia and New Zealand. And to give you a bit of context of, I guess, the brand, it's the biggest food brand in the world, not just in Nestle, but in the world, which is Maggi. And so we call it Maggi here and everywhere else in the world calls it Maggi, which I think is hilarious. But Maggi. So it's biggest brand in the world. We're in 800 million households. So 35% penetration of all households in the world. And interestingly, 1.8 billion portions served per day with Maggi. So if you think about a brand and scale and ability to impact, it doesn't get any bigger, literally. And so for us in Australia and New Zealand, we've got a portfolio that covers noodles and recipe solutions, which is things like recipe mixes that go into making meals, sauces, soups, stocks. So a broad portfolio, but certainly lots more opportunity as well. And as a business and a role, I guess we span across Australia and New Zealand under my remit, but we also go across the Pacific Islands as well, and have a very different business and a different model that we execute there. Couple of manufacturing locations within the region, also a couple of really important co-manufacturers that we work with and partner with. And then from a team's perspective, you know, I guess as you would expect of most sort of broad functional teams, so sales, marketing, product development, HR, finance, operations, technical teams. So a broad team. And ultimately, look, you know, with any business, your responsibility is to deliver the P&L, meet the commitments of the customer and delight the consumers. It's as simple as that, but obviously a lot more complex in reality.
Yeah, you make it sound really easy. But so in terms of running that organization, yes, operationally very complex, lots of moving parts. Do you set a mandate for yourself in terms of what you want to do with the business? Does that come from global? Mm-hmm. How running the ANZ and regional business, how does that interplay work?
So there's definitely, we've got global businesses, so strategic business units that are sat in our global head office for each business unit. And then we have zone offices as well. But ultimately the responsibility of our markets business strategy is on the shoulders of the general manager for that business in the market. And that's, you know, really important because the relevance of the market, the consumers, the tensions, the competitors, but also the key trends in each market are very different. So we operate in a zone that's with Asia and Africa, but, you know, we're a very developed market in a very developing region. And so the tensions and the trends are very different. So expecting someone else to create your strategy or your solutions is just not going to happen. So I think they do it in a really nice way where there's good structures and frameworks for support, but the expectation on setting the roadmap and the strategy very much sits firmly in the market.
And when you've got such a big role, Susan, how do you find time to kind of look at strategy and think about future as opposed to dealing with the here and now, which must have you running very quickly indeed?
It depends on the planning phase that you're in. So there's definitely, and I'm sure many other, certainly tier ones, but I'd imagine tier twos would have in place planning phases where there's a time that we set a framework and a structure around more strategic planning and setting up the longer term business framework and then going into, you know, sort of the midterm and then even the short term. So, you know, really when you're in that longer term framework phase, it's, you know, probably the majority of your time is really thinking about the long term. But, you know, you're right in saying day to day with so many dynamic impacts happening over the last few years, it's very easy to be, I don't want to say dragged, but pulled into the more operational aspects and the short term horizon versus the mid or long term. And I think that's where, you know, really having a very strong, capable, but also empowered team is critically important. So they feel like they can make decisions and they can own decisions, but also having a very safe and healthy environment where they feel really comfortable to come and escalate issues is critically important because then if there are big issues, then you get in the detail and you get involved. But otherwise, you let them do them and let them do their job and stay out of their sandpit.
Yeah. And I guess your role is also to connect them to the long-term thinking too. So whilst they're for sure in the moment of putting out fires or seeing opportunities that are there in front of them, they've got to feel that there's a purpose behind what we're trying to achieve here. Is that with the same degree of rigor and planning, or is that kind of moment by moment? How do you kind of make that connection to the long-term for your people?
Look, the first thing I would say is include them in it. I mean, the worst long-term strategies are the ones that are pushed down.
Yeah.
The best are the ones that are built with the team. And in conjunction with the team. And, you know, no one knows what's happening and the tensions and the trends and the impacts and the macro environment more than your team. And so the more you can include them And, you know, you won't want to include everyone all the time because it'll slow down the process or the thinking or the, you know, maybe even the quality of the output. But throughout the process of creating strategies or changing strategies, including the team in that is how you'll get both the buy-in but also the quality of the output. And then the way that you execute that in reality in the day-to-day to make sure that everything you're doing month to month, year to year, ladders to that, the roadmap or the strategy is, you know, how you have a really clear, you know, whether it be must-win battles or operational plan for the year and how they all ladder into each other. Yeah. And I think that's sometimes where it falls down. And sometimes you can have this great clear plan for the year, but because you don't say no to things or because you don't talk about it and share what it is or often how it's tracking, people forget. So it's really the role of communication and making sure you're saying no to things to make sure that you're delivering on what you've said.
Yeah, focus on the right things. Yeah.
The stuff that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And getting back to your career, what do you do next? Is it now you're at general manager level? A lot of people will look at your role and think, "Oh, right. Well, is that the end point?" No,
I hope not.
Well, yeah, I hope not. I should be pretty bored for a long time. So, when you look forward, what do you kind of what do you see in terms of career for you?
It's a really good question. I've only been in this role for about 5 months. It's probably premature of me to say what I'm going to do next, if I'm really honest.
No one's listening, don't worry.
Yeah. but, you know, if true to me, what I would hope for, continued learning and growth, continued levels of complexity and problem-solving requirements and just more diversity. You know, I think there's lots of people that have chosen, for example, whether it be Nestle or other companies where you're one, you know, I've been Nestle 19 years, but I've worked in 5 different business units. And so I've got a very broad base of different businesses and that's helped learning and growth. And so that I would like to continue. And there'll be periods where you do multiple roles in one business unit and that really helps you take transferable skills and build more knowledge. But I think the benefit for me in the future and the opportunity is just to keep getting more complexity, getting more challenges, you know, more problems to solve, more strategies to write. And, you know, where that is and what that looks like, you know, I don't know, but my passion is learning and growth. So as long as that's there, then I'll be excited and I'll be engaged.
Mm. And that could be with a Nestle or one day outside Nestle, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Know your worth in the market.
Know your worth in the market.
Yeah, great. Now, I do want to get a little bit granular on your role as well. We touched on that strategic piece earlier. A lot of our listeners will be get real value from actually digging into what senior leaders do, whether it's running a function or running a business. So a couple of things I want to just kind of visit. Now, is it possible to describe a typical day?
Yes, I could try. I could give you themes and buckets, I guess. Look, a typical day, probably a lot of other people listening will agree, it's lots of meetings. But I typically say that my day involves lots of debate and decisions. And so, you know, working with the team on, you know, what's right here and now or what's in the mid and long term and really discussing and debating, you know, have we got the right solution? Do we need to pivot? Is there other ways in? Is there other solutions we haven't considered? And then ultimately making decisions because the buck stops with you and our CEO is really clear on that. You're all the CEO of your own business and the buck stops with you. Mm. And so, you know, I think the best senior leaders will take decisions and they'll be big decisions and they'll be, you know, potentially a little bit uncomfortable and frightening, but being able to make that decision in that moment is really important. Mm. So ultimately, you know, I guess for me, in the day, I'll be spending time on strategy and reviewing the strategy. Does it need to pivot? Does it need to change? Is there any impacts that make us need to think about that? I'll be thinking about our priorities and what we've committed to and anything that we need to do differently to deliver that. I'll be thinking about our resources and, you know, are we structured in a way that will deliver the plan and the strategy? And when I say structured, it's not people necessarily, but it's tools. Process, money, you know, are we putting money where the biggest bets are? And, you know, so often in, I think, organization, we have so much stuff we do just for the sake of doing it or because we've done it before, but actually thinking about, is this the best place to spend our money or is this the best place to have the resource or is this the best process? So how do we consistently be challenging that to do better? And then finally, you know, rallying support. I think Nestlé is a massive organisation. We have obviously the local market, we have the zone, we have our global business in Switzerland, and we're very matrixed. And so a lot of my day is spent either communicating or managing stakeholders and their expectations to almost make sure I'm catching the balls to create the space and the freedom for the team to get on with it.
It's interesting. I think there's a lot in that, right? You know, and again, people looking at your role, they probably do see a lot of meetings and think, oh, gosh, it's always in meetings. You know, these leaders are always in meetings. What are they deciding? And one of the meetings that I think people find the most interesting is those senior leadership meetings. So you, presumably you have a senior leadership team that you run, and you will sit on a all of Nestlé ANZ leadership group as well. Mm-hmm. Yep. What are the differences between the two leadership groups?
Look, I'd say the leadership group within foods, obviously we're a lot more specific, focused on the challenges that we face within a business unit to deliver the commitments that we need to. And so probably by that nature then would be more operational or more aligned to the strategy that we're trying to deliver. So who
would sit on that group for your food business?
So we have our head of marketing, head of sales, our business unit controller, head of HR, the head of our factory, I'm just making sure I'm not, and head of DNSP, so supply, demand and supply planning. Yeah. So we'll have a broad cross-functional group and, you know, we'll be focusing on, you know, how are we tracking? What's our performance looking like? Are there any gaps that we need to be managing and doing that early and quick? We'll be talking about people, culture, how's everyone going, especially the last couple of years. I think it's been incredibly, you know, tumultuous, and how do we always think about people and where they're at and how they're feeling. We'll also talk about the strategy and you know, sense check. Are we focusing on the right stuff? Are we getting distracted by stuff? Are we spending too much time on stuff that's not actually going to change the organisation or move us forward? So they're kind of the biggest stuff. And then obviously there's crisis management. So there's always something going on that you need to lean into, and that'll be discussed in that forum as well.
Right. And is that group a, you know, do you meet and have a similar agenda every time? Is it the same buckets as you described there? Is it the same people attending as well, or do you bring in guests to kind of stimulate a different thought process?
Within the business unit leadership team meeting, it's we have a structure that's somewhat fixed for the first part, where we consistently talk about, you know, the aspects that are, you know, critically important for the year. So the numbers, our performance, I guess the execution of the plan, so the elements of the plan, whether that be customer or marketing plan. So that's fairly consistent.
Yeah.
And then what we do is leave space for all other business and all other topics, so that then, you know, whether it be HR or marketing, or they will bring in topics, and with that maybe people that will then share a topic or inspiration or a context that we need to discuss and agree as a group.
And I often find, I've just sat in different ELTs, and some are very organized, pre-aligned decision-making vessels, and some are more about actually almost debate, idea generate, challenge type meetings. That they're quite different. Now, is yours the former or the latter, or a mix of both? Or,
well, from a business unit perspective, I think previously it was more of aligning and pre-aligning.
Yeah,
I don't like that. I think my view is, if you've got a safe environment that's about delivering outcomes, you shouldn't need to have lots of pre-aligning, because people should come to that to have the discussion and feel safe that that's okay to do in that session. And I think even in the executive leadership team that I attend with the rest of my peers in Nestlé, I think that's true of that too. I mean, I have a quote, which is, bad news is better than a bad surprise. So if you've got a bad news for someone, then you probably should share it with them before you broadcast it to a group. And so, yes, you would do that. But otherwise, I would say our executive leadership team meetings are very, very much based on discussion, debate, and really trying to get to you know, a position of discussion versus pre-aligning. And it goes back to that point, you know, if you're having to pre-align everything and you're having to, you know, to do that before a meeting, well, you haven't got a safe environment and therefore is everyone working at their best?
Yeah, I'd agree. Absolutely. And so looking at your, the business ELT or the that you sit as with your peers who are presumably running the other 9 business units.
Yep.
So that's the CEO runs that, and then all the business unit heads sit on there. Is there is there kind of group functional heads on that meeting as well?
Yeah. So it's chaired by the CEO and sort of supported by us, our finance director.
Yeah.
But yeah, that involves the 9 business unit heads as well as all the functional heads. So, you know, head of technical production, head of operations, head of marketing, head of sales, head of legal, corporate affairs.
Yeah.
So it's a broad group. It's a large group, as you can imagine, but that's what you would expect of the big company, world's biggest food and beverage company.
Yeah.
So it's a monthly meeting that we catch up every month with the same group of people.
Right. And quite different to the meeting that you run for your business unit.
Yeah, very much more focused on the organisation at large in the market. So talking about, you know, outside of, you know, your business, you'll bring the input from your business or the perspective certainly to the table or updates from your business, especially, you know, if there's relationship to the functional areas or where you need support. But typically, you know, we try and focus in that meeting about the collective and about the organisation and about people and culture and also about, you know, what is going to move us forward and are we all focusing on the right areas to move the organisation forward.
And same kind of culture around open debate as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, our CEO is so candid and so open and she really encourages that, you know, and she'll say to us, I don't want to hear, you know, what I say is right. I want you to challenge. I want to hear what you think. And that's what I pay you for. You know, I pay for your thinking and I pay for your input. So she really encourages the environment of challenge and the environment of, you know, good, healthy debate, which is great.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I think people will be surprised to hear that. I think there's an assumption that a large business, it's all pre-aligned. It's here's the process, you know, execute. But actually it feels that there's a lot more creative thinking and challenge and debate within the reality of the business that you work in.
And look, it comes from leadership, you know, and we're fortunate we have a CEO, market head in Sandra that has, you know, trust. Yeah. And she has empowered us all. And she, you know, and as I said before, she says to us really clearly, like all the general managers, you are the CEO of your business. Mm. And, you know, and she expects us to be in enough of the detail to know the business, to run the business, to be across the business, but also setting really clear strategy and cultural direction for the benefit of the business. So, you know, I think with that privilege comes then the opportunity to have an environment that's based on trust and it's safe, and that helps, you know, drive the meeting and the culture.
Yeah, great. I want to ask a bit about resilience. Now, it's such a hot topic just now. Everybody I discuss their business with around what they're trying to do and the role I can play with talent. Resilience is really core around, you know, how do you build resilience? How do you assess for resilience? Is someone I'm hiring got resilience? Now, you see it a little bit differently to me, or a lot of people say, well, resilience is how you deal with tough times, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, describe your kind of perspective on resilience.
Yeah, I love the topic of resilience and I agree with you. It's like, it's all the buzz at the moment. And I think it should be because we've been through very tough times, but I see resilience not only as your ability to bounce back, but actually how do you not waste the crisis that you've just been in? How do you not just be in the crisis, but from that adapt and grow? And I think when you look at resilience, it's so closely linked to adversity. And, you know, I've heard so many people talk or speak or people I know that have been through huge adversities in their life. And I actually think they're the most resilient. And I think it's because that process they go through of adversity and then their ability to respond in a way that they bounce back stronger and even maybe thrive afterwards, that helps them, you know, either fuel or focus after that. And I think that's the that's the real opportunity in resilience, not, you know, just bouncing back, but actually being stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that positive take on it. I think it's too often seen negatively. Mm-hmm. As it's associated with adversity.
Yes.
Therefore, it's a negative emotion I try and work with, but actually it's not.
Bounce back stronger. Yeah. You know? I mean, you look at Taria Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, she was running an ultra marathon in WA. She had burns to over 65% of her body and she wasn't supposed to live. Yeah. And, you know, at the time she was a mining engineer, I think it was. And you know, now she's not only a mum, she's an author, she's a CEO. Like, her bounce back's been extraordinary. And I think, you know, there are so many examples of people, you know, that can actually take adversity and then with resilience and the ability to, you know, take control of that bounce back and use it to really focus and to energize, you know, the next step and the next way forward is remarkable. And that's what we should encourage.
Yeah, completely. And we often meet people in my role who are perhaps in, you know, career transition that they didn't plan. Mm-hmm. Their role's been restructured or their business has evolved and they've suddenly found themselves, you know, not in a job and wondering what to do next. And there's some who get very down about it and the ones that do well actually bounce back quickly because they see it as an opportunity to actually reevaluate, well, where am I? You know, was I blindly following the wrong goals or should I perhaps evolve my thinking around what goals I do follow and look at different options? So we see it a lot and seeing it positive, seeing adversity as a positive thing can be really hard in the first moment, but I think you can get there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're right in saying it's about creating the space and then, you know, how you reframe it as, you know, now what, or what if, you know, or I can if, you know, and if you can actually start to challenge yourself on actually, I am here, you can't change where you are, but you can change where you go. And I think that's, you know, scary and again, uncomfortable, but also an amazing opportunity.
Mm, absolutely. I want to finish on advice. I guess two perspectives. Firstly, where do you get your advice from?
I've set up what I would call a board because I don't love the word network, if I'm honest. And I think it's because of some of the baggage that comes with the word network. Because I think that, you know, it can be seen as disingenuous a little bit when, you know, you talk about networking. So I've set up what I would call my board and that's who I go to, whether it be for advice, feedback, but also encouragement. Because sometimes, you know, people have more confidence in you than you have in yourself. That's just the way it is. So on my board, I have personal and I also have business people. And so personal, obviously, my husband, who also works in the industry, but I also have an uncle who was in corporate, my mum, but I also have some friends that are in, you know, senior roles within the industry as well that, you know, understand and will provide some perspective. And then from a business perspective, I'll have past and present either peers or bosses I've worked with that I go to ask questions. And, you know, it's really helpful for me because a lot of them have either worked in Nestlé and understand Nestlé or know me. And so they can give you a perspective or a thinking that maybe you can't offer. So, yeah, that's definitely how I get my advice, but also sometimes the feedback and also sometimes the kick up the bottom I need too.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's important to you look at what you described there, Susan. There was definitely an internal component of it's important to have people within the business, but the majority of people are probably outside the business. And I think for those who surround themselves by their own board or their own network, they often get a little bit stuck, I find, in their own business. And there's always another agenda there in the advice someone's given you because it's not just with you in mind, it's about the business in mind.
Yeah, I agree.
Where I think what you're doing there is you're at the center of that.
Yes.
And therefore the advice is more
broad.
Genuine for you as well.
Yeah, and you want it to be broad because you want it to be, these are the people you want to go to for completely unbiased.
Yeah.
And what they're telling you is because they care about you above anything else. And so that's where, you know, if there's someone you really connected to in your organization or outside of your organization and they're no longer there, they're perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got a few of them that, you know, they're the most incredible advocates for understanding the business, but actually their priority is me. And I love that. That's the richest kind of advice I can get.
Great. So in finishing, I'd love to try and sum up if we can. If you could perhaps give three pieces of advice to those who I'm inspired by your story and think, oh, I'm really interested in potentially one day, you know, becoming, you know, Susan, you know, reaching that level of an organization, equipping myself to kind of go on that path. What would advice would you give? And I'm curious too, would that vary if you were talking to a male over a female?
I'll give you three pieces of advice, and it doesn't vary. I think it's for males and females, but I will, if I can, finish on one piece of advice and one message just for females, yep, because I think it's really important. Yep. So my first thing would be discover early the importance of others, because, you know, having an acute awareness of who you are and how you show up and the impact you have on others, if you can be aware of that and be managing and delivering consistency in that early, it'll help you when you get further in your career. But also you'll be able to get a sense of your ability to inspire but also achieve through others. And so that I would really encourage early. And it's hard because when we're in our early and mid-career, we're very focused on performance and outcomes of our role and our remit. But how you make sure you're pushing outside of that and really focusing on others early, I think is critically important. Secondly, never stop learning or being curious. I think, you know, people think you've made it. You go, well, no, I haven't. I'm just at a destination for a period of time. I love Kung Fu Panda. I have a 7-year-old. And Master Shifu said, if you only do what you can now, you'll never be more than you are. And so if you want to just be where you are now, stop learning, stop being curious. But ultimately the world keeps moving, so ultimately you probably go backwards, to be frank. So how do you be curious? How do you ask for feedback? How do you reflect? How do you look for ways to be better than you are today? And I think that is something that we should practice from early in our career to help set us up for success later in our career. And then the final thing, protect the priorities. You know, we talked a little bit about strategy and roadmap and business, but, you know, priorities are personal and business. And so definitely you need to create that roadmap and that strategy. And as I said earlier, it's about saying no as much as it is saying yes, and that's critically important. But as you get to more senior roles, you also have to be really careful and really conscious of creating boundaries for your personal life too. Because, you know, there are times where my son will say to me, you know, Mummy, you're not being present. Or Mummy, you can't come to my cross country because you're too busy and you've got a big job. And I love to prove him wrong. I love to be present and I love to show up at his cross country, because I set boundaries and I manage that priority, because right then at that point in time, that's the most important thing in my life. And I think that's really important to the longevity of a career, because it is a marathon, it's not a sprint, and you have to balance everything. And then finally for women, specific message, a conversation I have with a lot of women is around confidence. And I think that my message to the women would be confident in your ability. And internally, control the dialogue of self-doubt and control the need for perfection, because no one expects it of us, but we try and expect it of ourselves, and it will limit you. And then externally, show up authentically with courage and confidence. Don't try and be the biggest frame in the room or the biggest voice or the most aggressive, because that's what you think confidence is. Do it in your way. You know, and I was having a conversation with a lady last week, a mentor session, and she was saying she was really intimidated in this meeting where it was quite aggressive and she didn't know how to manage. And I suggested to her at the end of the meeting, you could simply say, I feel like we could do a better job in the next meeting in constructively working together and getting the same outcome. And that to me is a really confident move, but something that was really natural to her and authentic to her and the way that she could communicate, versus trying to match the energy in the room. Because ultimately, you know, if we can surround ourselves with more internal confidence and people around us that kind of give us that push further than we thought we could go, I think that's ultimate success for females in this space.
Fantastic. Really, really strong finish. I love that advice.
Thank you.
Superb. Great conversation. Really, really enjoyed it, Susan. So thank you so much for sharing and you know, covered so much and you know, really, really enjoyable. And thanks to you for listening. Next in the pod is a name a lot of you probably know, a guy called Paul Bull, who's a friend of mine. Paul's recently returned from a year's sabbatical, where he, prior to that, was running the real-world marketing business. He's now stepped into real-world analytics, perhaps the new vanguard of FMCG's revenue management in Paul's eyes. And we've got a lot to talk about there. Now, meanwhile, if listening to Susan has inspired you to set new career goals or think about the pathway you're on, please reach out anytime to me or my team. Our purpose is to really help you get ready for great career decisions. So we've got lots of tools that can help you, from our salary guides to our interview guides, how to craft a career conversation, market guides at what's going on, who's moving where and why, and guides even how to scale your team if you need to do that as well. So we'd love to hear from you if you're either looking to transition or just give advice on that, or looking to scale your team. We're all over it. Thanks again, Susan. That was awesome.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And for me, Mike Dixon, keep listening to our pod to help your future in sales and marketing. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast from AXR Recruitment and Search. We're passionate about helping you get the most out of your sales and marketing career. Keep listening as we bring you more career insights and advice from Australia's top sales and marketing leaders. You just can't get this career advice anywhere else. My name is Mike Dixon. See you next time on Your Future in Sales and Marketing.